Greetings. This is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, January 16th, 2026. We'll begin today with the front page reading, Mohammed Seymour Junior High, Experimental Subject. Teacher will put her students' theories herself to the test aboard zero-gravity aircraft. Story by Rob Lacates. Out of Mohammed. A Mohammed Seymour Junior High teacher is getting ready to put her students' experiments and her tolerance for different levels of gravity to the test next year. The Space for Teachers program selected Jennifer Smith, a life and earth science teacher now in her third year at the school, as one of 12 from around the country to participate in its 2025-26 embedded teacher program. As part of the program, she'll take flight aboard the nation's only zero-gravity aircraft to conduct student-designed hydrology experiments in varying levels of gravity. Smith said the opportunity isn't seen as an outreach project for young kids. Rather, the researchers want a true collaboration with students. I think they're really excited about it, just the fact that they're being taken seriously by professionals. And I think that's the one thing that I also want them to understand is that age doesn't define or limit you, she said. Everyone can think creatively, and that's one of the really cool things about the researchers that we're working with. The aircraft is the same one used by NASA, universities, and aerospace companies for authentic microgravity research and astronaut training. While on board, passengers will experience around 11 minutes of zero gravity in increments of 20 seconds. In preparation for the big day, her students covered different experiments to prepare for Smith's flight, like dropping water on pennies to measure surface tension and seeing how food dye impacts it. The same kids will design the holders and contain equipment that will be used in the experiments. On the flight, Smith will record the findings and measure how the angle between the liquid and solid surface meets in zero gravity, regular gravity, and double the Earth's gravity. Smith said she couldn't do this project without her students. We need the creativity of youth that hasn't yet been beaten down by the world, like they don't know the laws of physics, so they don't really know what can or cannot happen, she said. In addition to the experiments Smith will conduct, she will be a test subject for Rachel Seidler from the University of Florida, who has worked with astronauts training for stays on the International Space Station. Seidler will monitor Smith's intracranial fluids and vestibular system in flight. Smith has always aspired to be a teacher, as evidenced by an essay she wrote in third grade declaring that she would focus on language arts, give out homework, and make students try new things. She started her career at Crestwood Elementary in Paris, Illinois, teaching all subjects for 2 years. She then moved to Monticello, where she spent 14 years teaching science before heading to the Mohammed Seymour District. Smith said she didn't exactly want to teach science because the subject always required the right answer, which didn't sit well with her. Despite her hesitations, she went through the National Board certification process to prove to herself she knew the subject matter. Smith loves to tell the story when her students ask why she decided to teach science, because she said they couldn't imagine her in language arts. She said she didn't choose science, it chose her. I love teaching. I want to make sure that my students love learning, so I've embraced and accepted it, she said. You have to be able to love what you do, and so finding ways to make science interesting for students also makes it interesting for me. It keeps me learning new things. While life science was her focus, she needed to implement earth science and space into her normal curriculum when she arrived at Mohammed Seymour. Smith attended a microgravity workshop in November at the University of Texas at Austin's Center for Space Research, where she connected with fellow teachers and started to shape the student-centered project. There, Smith and the other partnered teachers learned they would have around 15 seconds to set up and conduct the experiment on the flight. She said students will soon start to time her until her flight date. She said she thought it was a really good idea when she applied, and then grew more excited once the program accepted her. At the workshop, she learned more about the specifics of the flight and its effects on the body. After learning that people commonly throw up when gravity shifts, she started to worry, but she's overcome her hesitations by focusing on the benefits to her students. My whole goal for teaching is to get them to see what's beyond this classroom and how the world impacts them, how they can have a positive impact on the world, and how the knowledge that they develop is valuable and useful to people beyond them, she said. She and her students saw a bright side about a more grotesque situation. There's a lot of throwing up, and it's not just whether or not I throw up, it's if somebody else is on the plane is also going to throw up, she said. So is it kind of one of our side quest experiments is to see what happens to vomit? It is science, and so the students are very eager to know what will happen with that, she said. The flight is set for some time between April and August, with the potential to leave from France. Everything is still up in the air, and Smith said it is an awesome opportunity because she wants to set an example for her students. Students asked me, "Why are you doing this?" And I said, "Because I want to know what you can do. I want you to know that you can do really cool, amazing things, and that science isn't just for people sitting in a lab, that we can make contributions, and that science is for everybody," she said. The next front page story is 6th Judicial Circuit, 18 apply to fill vacant associate judgeship. Story by Jim Day, out of Urbana. 18 local lawyers have applied to fill the vacant associate judge post in Champaign County. The vacancy was created by the resignation of Anna Benjamin, who returned to private practice after holding judicial office since 2019. The post will be filled by a vote of the circuit judges in the 6th County 6th Judicial Circuit. It's made up of Champaign, Macon, Piatt, Douglas, Moultrie, and DeWitt counties. The applicants are Matthew Banich, Lindsay R.S. Clark-Revist, Melissa Friedman, N.Chi Lin, David Moore, Colleen M. Ramayas, Eric Bullman, Joel Fletcher, Scott Larson, Troy Lozar, Christina Mullison, Daniel Reynolds, Marie Castile, Brian Freris, Lindsay Lepp, Ann Martinkus, Rachel Norton, and Rachel Ritzer. Regarding the vote, although it is circuit-wide, judges from other counties generally defer to the choice of the circuit judges in the county where the associate judge will sit. That means, effectively, that Champaign County's six circuit judges will make the choice of Benjamin's replacement, just as they did Benjamin. Associates are appointed for a 4-year term, although this spot will be filled on a truncated basis because Benjamin left midterm. Also on the front page, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, Tanner joining Astronaut Hall of Fame. Story by Jennifer Bailey. Out of Danville, it's not every day retired astronaut and Danville native Joe Tanner can be completely surprised. But a phone call from Kurt Brown, his crewmate on the first shuttle flight in 1994, and now chairman of the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation, did just that back in December. The extraordinary news, Tanner is one of two former astronauts, along with Tom Akers, who will be inducted into NASA's U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame at Florida's Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex on May 16th. Tanner said Akers is a dear friend of ours, and it's really special to be going through this process with him. Tanner will join the distinguished group of American space pioneers whose careers helped shape the Space Shuttle program, International Space Station assembly, and some of NASA's most complex and historic missions, according to the foundation. I knew I was on the ballot, Tanner said. But 75-year-old Tanner said he'd been on the ballot for quite a while, but you never know. He also kept the news close to the vest until a press release was made public last week. It's a tremendous honor, Tanner said. I always felt like I had a good career, what I was able to do, and am happy about my service to NASA. He also said it's nice to have someone else validate his work. He's already received many congratulations from his peers. The U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame welcomes two distinguished astronauts whose careers exemplify excellence, leadership, and service to human spaceflight, Brown said through a press release. Brown said Tanner and Akers made lasting contributions to NASA and the advancement of our nation's space program, and both have continued to extend their impact beyond NASA as educators and mentors. Their dedication and commitment reflect the very best of the astronaut corps, and we are honored to induct them. Tanner worked for NASA for more than 2 decades as a research pilot, flight instructor, Extravehicular Activity, EVA Branch Chief, and Mission Management Team Astronaut, and later supporting advanced exploration projects, including the Altair Lunar Lander. Tanner plans to attend the May induction ceremony at the Space Center with his wife, Martha, two sons, Matt and Will, and two brothers, John and Tom. He hopes all will be able to make it. Tanner, who lives in Colorado and returns a couple times a year to the family property north of Danville, also will be returning to speak and meet residents at a Vermilion County 200th anniversary weekend event. He said he speaks around his local Colorado area and in schools, but normally doesn't travel to speak. However, he's making an exception to come back to Danville for the county's 200th anniversary year-long celebration. The two-day Mastodons to the Moon event will feature a special program by Tanner about his personal trips into space from 2 to 3:30 p.m. August 8th at Danville High School's Dick Van Dyke Auditorium, then from 1:30 to 4 p.m. August 9th at the Vermilion County Museum in Danville, there will be an open house with an exhibit, meet and greet with Tanner, and light refreshments. Vermilion County Museum Executive Director and Vermilion County 200th Anniversary Steering Committee Co-Chair Sue Richter said there will be handouts and other activities throughout the day for children, and people will be able to come say hello to Tanner, take photos with him, and get his autograph. Richter said that while Tanner has conducted various programs in the past with the symphony at Vermilion County schools and other locations, he's never done a full program for the general public. "We think this is really exciting to do this in conjunction with Vermilion County's 200th anniversary," Richter said. Richter said the anniversary theme is 200 years of new frontiers, and you can't get a bigger frontier than space and the moon. The year-long county anniversary, also with some events tying into the nation's 250th anniversary this year, covers the county's history from the first Native Americans and settlers to generations of businesses and residents impacting the area, including Tanner going all the way into space. And finally on the front page, episode As Heard On, airing from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday on WDWS 1400 AM and streaming online at newsgazette.com. Bill Self's 2001 Big Ten champs aren't the only ones getting back together this weekend for a reunion in Champaign. Also planning to take on in Saturday's men's basketball matchup with Minnesota at State Farm Center, two former Illini sharpshooters and their special guests. "I want to get my dad, Phil, a 1956 graduate, down, and Doug Altenberger is bringing his dad, Bill, down. They play together for Harry Combs," Rob Judson said. "We're bringing them to the game, and we're going to get them to Huff Gym, where they played all their games at that time. I'm looking forward to that." Judson, an assistant coach at his alma mater under both Lon Kruger and Self, took a stroll down memory lane on Thursday's 8th episode of News Gazette Radio, reliving the recruitment of Peoria Manuals' Sergio McLean and Marcus Griffin. "There was no way we could let those guys go to Indiana." And marveling at the careers of the Keaton Wagglers of his era, who went from lightly recruited to all Big Ten, Kevin Turner and Corey Bradford. The top headline to emerge from Thursday's UI trustees meeting in Chicago: the cost of an Illinois education going up on the flagship campus. Tuition by 2% for undergraduate state residents and between 7 and 14.5% for non-resident and international students. Room and board by 5% next fall for first-time residents. Returning students who've maintained continuous occupancy in the residence halls will pay the same rate for up to 4 years. Student fees by 2%. Also approved the addition of a bachelor's degree in hip-hop culture and the arts, which Jana Wiersema featured in Thursday's News Gazette. It took a village to get the new offering to the finish line, UI music education professor Pete Chungu said, but the idea was largely inspired by one man. "This would not be happening without the work of the late Professor Will Patterson," Chungu said. "He was someone who was really invested in seeing hip-hop grow at the University of Illinois." Ahead of today's annual caravan stop at the Hilton Garden Inn, the TV voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, Chip Carey, called in to talk about the rebuilding Redbirds. Who does Harry Carey's grandson think will be the breakout Cardinal during a season of low expectations? I'm hopeful for Jordan Walker. The Cardinals really need this kid to have a big year and establish that he belongs up here. He's had 3 seasons not to just dip his feet in the water, but paddle the canoe, and it hasn't worked out particularly well for him. And when you think about it, the Cardinals really haven't developed a homegrown, middle-of-the-lineup hitter since Albert Pujols. That's 2 decades or more. That's way too long. He's got the skill set. He's got the talent. He's just got to go do it. Moving over to national and world news. Trump's immigration crackdown. Have y'all not learned? Federal agents repeatedly clash with and threaten legally present observers in aftermath of Renee Good shooting. Story by Liz Sawyer, Minnesota Star Tribune, TNS. Out of Minneapolis. Reported ICE activity sent concerned citizens racing to Knollwood Mall last week, determined to track a convoy of unmarked vehicles carrying federal immigration agents. It took less than half a mile for the agents to spot the tail. One agent accelerated, then slammed on his brakes, immediately causing a minor collision with a Honda CR-V behind him. Abigail Salm, trailing 2 cars back, pulled over to film the encounter as men in camouflage pulled 2 occupants out of the SUV. "Listen, have y'all not learned from the last couple of days?" an officer clad in tactical gear said to Salm, 27. The fatal shooting of Renee Good happened 48 hours earlier. "Learned what?" Salm pressed, according to a video of the interaction. "What's our lesson here?" "Following federal agents," he said with an expletive, snatching the phone from her hand. A heated verbal exchange resulted in her brief detention at the scene on January 9th. Salm said she was restrained, manhandled, and threatened to be shot by an armed agent. Operation Metro Surge, touted by President Donald Trump as the largest immigration crackdown in history, deployed a legion of federal agents across the Twin Cities that far surpasses any single Minnesota police force. The growing number of bystanders and trained observers are mobilizing to lawfully monitor those federal enforcement efforts. They say agents are responding with increasing aggression that includes detainment, overt threats, and physical abuse. Viral video clips of violent arrests and emotional first-hand accounts of alleged mistreatment by masked agents are flooding social media platforms. Complaints to the American Civil Liberties Union about excessive tactics have also surged in recent days. Numerous individuals recounted being pulled from their vehicles, tackled, and sprayed with chemical irritants while attempting to watch or pursue ICE agents as they moved in to arrest or detain individuals. Many agents captured on bystander cell phone videos did not take kindly to being followed. They regularly accused citizens of impeding operations. 3 local attorneys consulted by the Minnesota Star Tribune said no state law prohibits motorists from trailing law enforcement on public roadways. Surveilling federal actions this way is legal, experts say, as long as those drivers obey local traffic laws, maintain a safe distance, and don't otherwise interfere with their enforcement efforts. "You have a right to be there. You have a right to record and publish the information," said Isabella Salomal Nascimento, a First Amendment attorney at Minneapolis-based law firm Ballard Spahr. "What has been very stunning is how easily spooked and how easily triggered these guys are." The Department of Homeland Security did not respond to detailed requests for comment, but in prior public statements and recent court filings, federal officials have pointed to a dramatic rise in pursuits involving government vehicles, a phenomenon they said was virtually non-existent before 2025. They also note that assaults on agents are up exponentially. Such pursuits have resulted in vehicular crashes, endangerment of officer and public safety, harassment, and even at least 1 arrest by local authorities, U.S. Department of Justice attorneys wrote in a December motion, responding to a class action lawsuit alleging maltreatment by ICE. Hennepin County deputies arrested a 27-year-old man accused of chasing a federal employee in his Mini Cooper at high speeds for nearly 24 miles the day after Christmas, according to search warrant affidavit. The federal official told local authorities that he feared getting in a shootout with the driver, who aggressively weaved in and out of traffic and ran another vehicle off the road during the pursuit. That driver was booked in jail for probable cause harassment, but never charged. The case remains under investigation. Constitutional law experts examining recent footage and witness statements reject the sweeping characterization that simply monitoring federal agents, either on the street or from your car, is thwarting their ability to make arrests. "A lot of what I see is not impeding, it's not obstruction," said Alicia Grancy, a staff attorney with the Minnesota's ACLU chapter, who is currently tasked with triaging a mountain of onlooker and protester complaints. "It's protected speech. It's telling the government that they don't like what they're doing." Since Good's January 7th killing, Grancy estimates she has personally fielded about 75 reports documenting abuses by ICE, including around 10 related to reckless driving. ACLU lawyers also heard stories about observers trailing ICE vehicles being led to their own homes, presumably as a form of intimidation. Privacy advocates fear agents are misusing personal data obtained through license plate readers and car registrations, according to NPR News. Since the operation has intensified, video and eyewitness accounts of the encounters between citizens and federal agents overtook social media. Some paint a full picture, while others don't show what preceded them. In the past week alone, ICE boxed in a Woodbury real estate agent recording their movements from his car, slammed him to the ground, and detained him at the Whipple Federal Building near Fort Snelling for 10 hours. A 51-year-old teacher patrolling the Nokomis East community told the Star Tribune she was run off the road into a snowbank by ICE for laying on her horn. Officers shattered the car window of a woman attempting to drive past a raid in South Minneapolis to get to a doctor's appointment nearby, then carried her through the street. Feds pushed an unidentified motorist through a red light into a busy intersection, reportedly fired projectiles at a pedestrian walking too slowly in a crosswalk, and shoved Minneapolis City Council President Elliot Payne while he was observing their actions from a public sidewalk. The real estate agent, Ryan Eklund, appeared in an Instagram video with bruises on his face, alleging that he was forcibly removed from his vehicle for exercising my legal rights, and later confined to a cell with several other U.S. citizens. "I wasn't impeding an investigation. I wasn't flashing my lights or driving erratically or honking my horn at anyone," he said after his release. "I was simply recording them as they moved around the city." Patty O'Keefe and Brendan Seguenza told reporters they were similarly following agents seen pepper-spraying observers January 11th when officers surrounded their car and blasted chemical irritants inside the vents. After smashing their windows and handcuffing the duo, O'Keefe said agents proceeded to taunt her appearance and make derogatory comments about Renee Good. Salm, who witnessed the collision in Hopkins, noted that no one ever bothered to check her ID or inquire about her citizenship status while in custody. "They're bullies," she told the Star Tribune. "I was just videotaping." Local law enforcement leaders have repeatedly expressed concerns about what they view as escalating and unnecessarily dangerous behavior by federal authorities. Trump threatens to use Insurrection Act. Out of Minneapolis in the AP. President Donald Trump on Thursday threatened to invoke an 1807 law and deploy troops to quell persistent protests against the federal officers sent to Minneapolis to enforce his administration's massive immigration crackdown. The threat comes a day after a man was shot and wounded by an immigration officer who had been attacked with a shovel and broom handle. That shooting further heightened the fear and anger that has radiated across the city since an Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent fatally shot Renee Good in the head. Trump has repeatedly threatened to invoke the Insurrection Act, a rarely used federal law, to deploy the U.S. military and federalize the National Guard for domestic law enforcement over the objections of state governors. "If the corrupt politicians in Minnesota don't obey the law and stop the professional agitators and insurrectionists from attacking the patriots of ICE, who are only trying to do their job, I will institute the Insurrection Act, which many presidents have done before me, and quickly put an end to the travesty that is taking place in a once great state," Trump said on social media post. Presidents have invoked the law more than 24 times, most recently in 1992 by President George H.W. Bush to end unrest in Los Angeles. In that instance, local authorities had asked for the assistance. Trump has repeatedly toyed with the idea of invoking the Insurrection Act, starting in his first term, but hasn't followed through. In 2020, for example, he threatened to use the act to quell protests after George Floyd was killed by Minneapolis police. U.S. Congress. War powers resolution fails in Senate. Two Republicans flip votes after calls by president. Out of Washington and the AP. Senate Republicans rejected a war powers resolution Wednesday that would have limited President Donald Trump's ability to conduct further attacks on Venezuela after two GOP senators reversed course in supporting the legislation. Trump put intense pressure on five Republican senators who joined with Democrats to advance the resolution last week and ultimately prevailed in heading off passage of the legislation. Two of the Republicans, Senators Josh Hawley of Missouri, and Todd Young of Indiana, flipped under the pressure. Vice President J.D. Vance had to break the 50-50 deadlock in the Senate on a Republican motion to dismiss the bill. The outcome of the high-profile vote demonstrated how Trump still has command over much of the Republican conference. Yet the razor-thin tally also showed the growing concern on Capitol Hill over the president's aggressive foreign policy ambitions. Democrats forced the debate after U.S. troops captured Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro in a surprise nighttime raid earlier this month. "Here we have one of the most successful attacks ever, and they find a way to be against it. It's pretty amazing, and it's a shame," Trump said at a speech Tuesday in Michigan. He also hurled insults at several of the Republicans who advanced the legislation, calling Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky a stone-cold loser and Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine disasters. Those three Republicans stuck to their support for the legislation. Trump's latest comments followed earlier phone calls with the senators, which they described as terse. The president's fury underscored how the war powers vote had taken on new political significance as Trump also threatens military action to accomplish his goal of possessing Greenland. The legislation, even if it had cleared the Senate, had virtually no chance of becoming law because it would eventually need to be signed by Trump himself. But it represented both a test of GOP loyalty to the president and a marker for how much leeway the Republican-controlled Senate is willing to give Trump to use the military abroad. Republican angst over his recent foreign policy moves, especially threats of using military force to seize Greenland from a NATO ally, is still running high in Congress. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Friday, January 16th, 2026. Please stay tuned.